Rosie with your worldwide news update. An intense day of Israeli strikes killed hundreds of people in Lebanon on Monday, AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It was the deadliest day for the Lebanese since Israel's 2006 war with Hezbollah. The Israeli military says these strikes were aimed at the group's weapons sites and is urging residents of southern and eastern Lebanon to evacuate before more operations.
Take this warning seriously.
In a message to civilians, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Hezbollah continues hiding weapons in their homes, and the Israelis will take action.
Please, get out of harm's way now.
Here at the White House.
Working to de-escalate in a way that allows people to return to their homes safely.
President Biden spoke shortly after the Pentagon announced more U.S. troops will head to the Middle East. There are about 40,000 there now. The military is not saying how many more will go or what they will do. Sagar Magani at the White House.
The Israeli military said on Monday it struck about 1,300 Hezbollah targets in Lebanon.
We conducted extensive strikes against Hezbollah terror targets in Lebanon that posed an imminent threat.
Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, who said there were many secondary blasts when munitions stored inside buildings exploded. He said Israeli strikes hit long-range cruise missiles, heavyweight rockets, short-range rockets, and explosive drones. Hagari said Hezbollah put weaponry inside people's homes, claiming they intended to use the arms against civilian targets in Israel.
It's likely that some of the casualties are from these secondary explosions.
In response to the strikes, Hezbollah said it launched dozens of missiles at a military base in northern Israel. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday urged world leaders to support Ukraine, quote, for a just and peaceful future, as he spoke at the summit of the future at the United Nations on Monday.
Putin has stolen much already, but he will never steal the world's future. I'm sure.
A Russian missile strike on Ukraine's southeastern city of Zaporizhia on Monday hit critical infrastructure and injured at least two people after attacks on the city late on Sunday wounded 21, regional authorities said. Russia denies targeting civilians, but thousands have been killed and injured since Moscow launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. Zelensky will take part in a UN Security Council meeting on Tuesday before speaking before the UN General Assembly on Wednesday. Survivors of sexual abuse in Belgium called on Pope Francis to take stronger action against perpetrators and push for deeper reforms in the Catholic Church days ahead of his visit to Brussels. Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn reports.
Pope Francis is set to meet with survivors and activists in the coming days while on a tour of Belgium and Luxembourg that will also focus on migrants. Catholic clergy abuse scandals have emerged in countries across the world in recent decades. More than 700 complaints and reports of abuse involving the church have been made in Belgium since 2012, according to a report by the Catholic Church in Belgium in 2022. The pontiff, who calls abuse demonic, says he's made prevention a priority. Francis created the first high-level PayPal commission to address clergy abuse. He also debuted a global system for Catholics to report suspicions of abuse or cover-ups by bishops. Survivor groups say they want to see more, including having the Pope mandate that all clergy globally must report any suspicions of abuse to local authorities.
Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Minister of Justice says nearly 1,700 ill inmates have been released from the country's largest prison as part of an effort to thin out Congo's overcrowded prisons. The operation took place on Monday at the country's largest prison in the capital, Kinshasa. Severely ill prisoners received immediate medical care, while others were sent home on buses provided by the Ministry of Justice and a state-owned company, according to Congo's Minister of Justice. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
people of southern Lebanon to evacuate as it bombs Hezbollah.
I have a message for the people of Lebanon. Israel's war is not with you. It's with Hezbollah.
Hollywood actor Meryl Streep goes to bat for Afghan women at the UN.
In Kabul, a female cat has more freedoms than a woman.
And the U.S. state of California sues ExxonMobil, saying it lied about plastic recycling.
We're conducting a decades-long campaign of deception to convince the public that recycling makes plastic, including single-use plastic, sustainable.
Today is Tuesday, September 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
For too long, Hezbollah has been using you as human shields. It placed rockets in your living rooms and missiles in your garage.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu talking to the people of southern Lebanon, telling them to evacuate north as Israel carries out its deadliest bombardment in the country since its war with Hezbollah in 2006. Lebanon's health ministry says a wave of Israeli airstrikes across the country on Monday killed at least 490 people and wounded more than 1,600. We get the latest now from Reuters correspondent Diane Toe.
Black plumes of smoke rose over Lebanese villages on Monday after Israel unleashed its most widespread wave of airstrikes against Hezbollah targets as both sides appeared steeling themselves for all-out war. Israeli military spokesperson Daniel Hagari, in a video statement, urged Lebanese civilians to flee immediately from Hezbollah posts, such as those used to store weapons.
This is an advance warning for your own safety and the safety of your family.
Lebanon's health ministry on Monday said the Israeli attacks killed hundreds of people, including women, children, and medical workers. Asked by reporters about a possible Israeli ground incursion into Lebanon, Hagari said the military will do, quote, whatever is needed in order to return residents evacuated from northern Israel to their homes safely. In a video published by his office on Monday, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told Israelis that the country is deepening its attacks against Hezbollah and urged them to stay calm.
Ahead of us are the days when the public will have to show composure, discipline, and full obedience to the directives of the Home Front Command. The difference between success and failure lies in the fact that the citizens entered protected rooms and other places in accordance with the instructions we gave them.
Tensions hit new highs as the two sides traded cross-border fire over the weekend. Israeli warplanes carried out the most intense bombardment across Lebanon's south in almost a year of conflict, alongside the war in Gaza, with Hezbollah firing rockets deep into northern Israel. On Sunday, a dash cam caught the moment when a Hezbollah rocket hit the northern Israeli town of Kiryat Bialik. The Israeli ambulance service said that three people were injured in the blast. The cross-border conflict sharply escalated early last week after thousands of pagers and walkie-talkies used by Hezbollah members exploded in what was an unprecedented security breach. Israel has neither confirmed nor denied responsibility. On Friday, an Israeli airstrike on a Beirut suburb killed dozens of people, including children, as well as a senior Hezbollah leader and a commander, the armed group said. At a funeral on Sunday, Hezbollah Deputy Chief Naim Qassem told mourners, quote, "We have entered a new phase, the title of which is the open-ended battle of reckoning."
Reuters correspondent Diane Toe. The Biden administration has raised serious concerns about the collection of data by Chinese companies, particularly on U.S. drivers and the infrastructure of the U.S., as well as having the potential for foreign manipulation of vehicles which are connected to the internet and navigation systems. The U.S. Commerce Department is seeking a ban on the sale of connected and autonomous vehicles in the U.S. that are equipped with both Chinese and Russian software and hardware, with the stated goal of protecting national security and U.S. drivers. Commerce officials described the rules announced Monday as proactive and necessary, given all the bells and whistles on cars like microphones and cameras and Bluetooth. Those things can reveal a range of personal information about car owners. Joining us now to talk about this is Brandy Nonicke, founding director of the Citrus Policy Lab, associate professor at the UC Berkeley Goldman School of Public Policy, and the host of the podcast Tech Hype. All right, thanks so much for joining us and talking about this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, like all things these days technical, this is really complicated. So let's start at the very beginning and try to explain to people what the U.S. government's concern is with these cars and this software.
Yeah, the move by our federal government, it's not unprecedented. We've seen over the past year or two, you know, looking at blocking TikTok, the social media platform, over concerns that China was collecting data in order to, you know, enact surveillance against American citizens. Now, this move, it's really quite interesting because there is a history of China actually trying to attack our critical infrastructure. And one of the groups that is behind that is called Volt Typhoon, and it's a Chinese state-sponsored hacker group. And it's been known that they have sought to compromise thousands of devices in order to infiltrate, potentially shut down our critical infrastructure like communications, energy, and transportation systems. Now, one thing that's really important is that currently there is not a lot of Chinese software or hardware in our connected vehicles. However, with the automotive industry, you know, booming and the adoption of electronic vehicles, connected vehicles increasing year over year, manufacturers are going to want to look for the best fit of software or hardware, often at the cheapest price. Now, putting this ban in place would restrict, domestic automobile manufacturers from procuring that technology. And in doing so, the federal government thinks that, look, we're going to get out ahead of this. We're going to ensure that we don't end up in a position where we have thousands of connected vehicles, you know, driving along the roads that are connected to critical infrastructure that could pose a potential national security problem.
I think that Ford and General Motors both make a car in China that they bring for sale to the United States. But you're right, there aren't many, if any, actual Chinese EVs or other types of automobiles for sale in the United States. When you say connecting to critical infrastructure, what exactly does that mean? Is it like when you plug it in to charge it, or when it's talking to, all cars are computers now. How is the car communicating with our critical infrastructure?
Yeah, I'd say my first concern is the electrical grid, right? We have to charge up these EVs. You plug them into those charging stations, and if you have some malware that's been embedded in your vehicle, that malware can now be redistributed and passed on to the other vehicles and to our energy infrastructure. That, to me, is one of the biggest concerns. But also, as these vehicles become more sophisticated in their technology, and as we continue to see cities investing in that smart city technology, we're going to see vehicles communicating a lot more with infrastructure around them, like the other vehicles or infrastructure on roads, the lights, the tolls, everything.
I assume, you know, my car has multiple cameras all over the car. I can see forward, sideways, backwards, underneath. I assume that that's one of the vulnerabilities as well, especially for somebody who works at a, you know, sensitive installation, right? An infrastructure installation, a power plant, a military base, a federal research center.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, these cars are essentially computers, and they're equipped with multiple cameras, sensors. That's just a wealth of information. You know, you can use that vehicle to capture a lot of data and insights, and in the wrong hands, that's a serious, serious issue.
So this extends really beyond just automobiles, right? Like my refrigerator, it talks to my Wi-Fi and it sends me messages when it needs service or the filter changed.
Yeah, exactly. And we've seen this play out before where other smart devices have been infected with malware by Chinese hacking groups. You know, they take advantage of really weak administrative passwords, take advantage of weak security networks to be able to infiltrate our Internet of Things devices. This is a serious national security issue as the United States and many other countries, the consumers are turning more toward having these smart devices.
I mean, it's not even just that they could hack it. I think they make it. I think I own a General Electric refrigerator, which I think is now owned by a Chinese company.
Yeah, that is true. Very often, a lot of our technology is manufactured in China, and there is a serious concern that those electronics we're receiving might have malicious hardware or software embedded in them. Now, there's one thing in this proposal that there could be possible exceptions. So some of these Chinese companies, right, they're able to keep costs low, that keeps American consumers happy, that they could essentially apply for an exemption to this and still be able to provide their services to the U.S. market. Now, that's only going to be successful if there is stringent oversight and validation that the security risks are not there.
So the U.S. government would have to actually look at their hardware and their coding to see if it's not got something embedded in it? Is that how that works?
Yes, exactly. Or if, you know, a U.S. manufacturer is procuring components that are manufactured in China, then essentially the onus is on them to ensure that they are not procuring a technology that has any of these vulnerabilities.
Hmm. Interesting stuff, huh?
We live in a very interesting time where our fridge is now a potential weapon to start a war. Yeah, I guess that's a new phrase for the Cold War.
That's good. Thank you so much for the time and the lesson.
Thank you so much for having me.
Randy Nonnicke, founding director of the Citrus Policy Lab, an associate professor at UC Berkeley's Goldman School of Public Policy, and host of the podcast Tech Hype. At the UN General Assembly on Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged world leaders to support Ukraine, saying, for a just and peaceful future.
Putin has stolen much already, but he will never steal the world's future, I'm sure.
Russia has unleashed a barrage of attacks on Ukraine's power plants as winter approaches. We're following these other stories from around the world. Violent crime in the U.S. dropped in 2023, according to FBI statistics that show a continued trend downward after a coronavirus pandemic-era crime spike. Overall, violent crime declined about 3% in 2023 from the year before. Murders and non-negligent manslaughter dropped nearly 12%. Sri Lankan dollar bonds fell sharply on Monday as investors worry an election by Anura Kumara Dissanayake could see him revisit the terms of the country's International Monetary Fund bailout and debt restructuring. A 5.6 magnitude earthquake struck near Japan's remote Izu Islands on Tuesday, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, prompting local weather authorities to issue a tsunami warning. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, Muslims account for less than 2% of the U.S. population. But as VOA's Kane Faribault reports, Muslim American influence in U.S. elections is growing, driven largely by concerns over the continued war between Israel and Hamas.
In the Chicago, Illinois suburb of Bridgeview, also known as Little Palestine, workers at the Kawa serve a seemingly endless supply of coffee products to the Palestinian Americans rotating through the shop.
Anywhere you go in this area, you'll see people who are visibly Muslim.
Deanna Hoffman teaches at the local Islamic school and frequents the Kawa. The most important issue to Hoffman this election year is ending the war between Israel and U.S.-designated terrorist group Hamas. The war started with the Hamas attack on Israel last year that killed 1,200 people and led to the capture of 250 hostages. Since then, more than 41,000 Palestinians have died in Israel's counteroffensive, a number Israel says includes thousands of militants.
To win my vote, I would have to see a commitment to ending the genocide immediately.
Many in Little Palestine share Othman's concerns. Cook County, Illinois, encompassing Chicago and Bridgeview, has the largest Palestinian community in the country. Illinois is home to about 475,000 Muslim Americans, about 3.7% of the total population.
They do make up a substantial minority in Illinois, and they tend to vote Democrat.
Tabitha Bonilla is a professor of social policy at Northwestern University.
So in Illinois, it's unlikely that they would swing an election. But in a state like Michigan, they're estimated to be about 200,000 Muslim American voters. And just for reference, the gap between Republicans and Democrats in the last presidential election was 154,000 people. So if all 200,000 Muslim American voters decide either not to vote or to not vote Democrat, that can really make a difference in a swing state like Michigan.
These are folks in Michigan that know firsthand the impact of American-funded bombs.
Leila Elabed is a community political organizer in Michigan and sister of the state's Palestinian-American Congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib.
We want to shift course on the current policy and adopt a policy that will save Palestinian lives.
The Muslim community, not just in Michigan, but in nearly every state, is more active, more involved than ever before.
Keith Ellison is Minnesota's current attorney general and was one of the first Muslim American members of the U.S. Congress.
The Muslim community has stronger political muscles than ever before and is making itself heard.
Deanna Hoffman says she wishes she had other options on the ballot.
I feel like the majority of people in this area do not want to vote Democrat or Republican.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, estimates more than 2.2 million Muslim Americans are registered to vote in the United States this election year. It says that represents an increase of more than a million since the midterm election 2 years ago. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Bridgeview, Illinois.
Russia has generated more AI content to influence the U.S. presidential election than any other foreign power as part of its broader effort to boost Republican candidate Donald Trump over Democrat Kamala Harris. This according to a U.S. intelligence official on Monday. The official, who's from the Office of Director of National Intelligence, spoke on the condition of anonymity, but made the comment in a briefing to reporters on the use of AI by Russia and other countries to influence the November 5th vote. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. At the UN Monday, actress Meryl Streep stood up for women and girls in Afghanistan.
The way that this culture, this society has been upended is a cautionary tale for the rest of the world. In the 70s, most of the civil servants were women, over half the teachers, doctors. There were women jurists, lawyers, in every profession, and then the world upended. And today, in Kabul, a female cat has more freedoms than a woman. A cat may go sit on her front stoop and feel the sun on her face. She may chase a squirrel into the park. A squirrel has more rights than a girl in Afghanistan today because the public parks have been closed to women and girls by the Taliban. A bird may sing in Kabul, but a girl may not, and a woman may not in public. This is extraordinary.
The Taliban seized power in August 2021 when U.S.-led forces withdrew after 20 years of war. The U.N. has sought a unified global approach to dealing with the Taliban, who've cracked down on women's rights. The Taliban have barred girls from education beyond the sixth grade. They have closed beauty salons and curtailed travel for women who do not have a male guardian. As world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, anticipation is mounting for countries to report their next round of plans to meet global climate goals. These plans are called Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley explains their importance.
In the world's struggle to bring down levels of planet-warming carbon emissions to Paris Agreement goals, countries periodically report on their plans and progress. These reports help countries coordinate with one another and can tell us if the world is on track to meet its climate goals. Once updated every 5 years, countries have been asked to focus on setting more ambitious near-term emissions targets for 2030 and 2035.
The next round of NDC submissions is due by February 2025.
This is Jamal Sruji, a climate policy expert with the World Resources Institute.
Because so far we are not on track to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, these NDCs will be quite critical and will shed light on our ability to confront the climate crisis.
While some countries may detail new plans at the UN General Assembly, others may opt to sharing them during COP29 in Azerbaijan, the upcoming UN climate summit in November. An NDC is considered strong if it is detailed, ambitious, and credible. It should set emissions reductions targets for key polluting sectors like energy and transportation, and also reconcile national policies that might frustrate progress, such as fossil fuel subsidies. There should also be plans for how a country will monitor progress. NDCs also need to ensure the transition to a greener world is fair to workers and communities. Pledges made within an NDC are considered voluntary, with countries facing no legal penalty if they fail to meet their own goals. Still, some countries like Britain and Chile have incorporated their NDCs into national law, while others have faced litigation.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley. So here's an example of what's happening to the climate. The U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, saw 113 consecutive days of temperatures reaching 37.7 degrees Celsius or higher this summer.
We had the hottest meteorological summer on record in Phoenix. And we broke the previous record, which was set last year in 2023, by almost 2 degrees.
And finally,
this morning, we filed a lawsuit with 6 causes of action against ExxonMobil.
The U.S. state of California sued ExxonMobil Monday, alleging it deceived the public for 50 years by promising that recycling would address the global plastic pollution crisis.
Let me be clear, it does not.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
The company has propped up sham solutions, manipulated the public, and lied to consumers.
The lawsuit is the first of its kind.
ExxonMobil promoted and vastly increased its production of single-use plastic while doling out false promises that its plastics are sustainable and recyclable, and false promises that recycling would take care of ensuing plastic waste and help ExxonMobil use less fossil fuel to make new plastic, a solution it knew wasn't technically or economically viable.
ExxonMobil did not immediately respond to a request for comment to the Associated Press. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Wolterman.